Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Click, click.
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com, and you better go quick. You better go before 2021 is over, because you can get The Athletic for a full year for $24. That's it. Go do it right now. Theathletic.com/NBA show is a link that you should use, so go check that out. And with me, as always, is my good friend Alex Spears. Alex, what's up, man?
What's up, Andrew? By the time people are listening to this, it's going to be the new year.
Yeah. Can't wait. I can't wait for a new year.
How exciting. So it's been 2 weeks. I'm not going to do an introduction because, one, it would be 2 weeks of me going through games, and also a lot of those games did not matter.
Well, and going through players that have been in and out of protocols, or like all these new players that signed. I learned there's a Chandi Brown and a Charlie Brown that were both brought up from the G League. There's a lot.
Ooh,
going
that's
on.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So I'm skipping that this week. And instead, I've got a fun little project to share. Now, if you remember back in preseason, I introduced the idea of the surprise team. This was the team that had a low over-under and was going to beat their over-under by at least 10 games. This has happened every year for the last 20 years. I went with the Cavs, still looking good, although Ricky Rubio did just tear his ACL, which does hurt.
Yeah.
Then, a few weeks later, we did the fake surprise team. This is the team who, in the first 20 games of the season, has home court advantage in their conference, but would go on to miss the playoffs completely. I went with the Wizards on that. Still feeling okay about that.
Feeling pretty good about that. I think I picked the Knicks, which I'm also feeling pretty good about.
Should feel good about that as well. And so now I'm introducing a third team. And this one is a much more hopeful, you know. Forget the fake surprise. I know that was kind of a downer. This one is more positive because this is the turnaround team. So the criteria for the turnaround team is that they are in the eighth seed or worse at some point around 30 games into the season. So I set it as 28 to 32 games within the season. This team is in the eighth spot or worse. They go on to have a huge second half, and not only do they make the playoffs, they actually win a series. And that's a very important point, because you could imagine a scenario where a lot of teams right now could make the playoffs, like whatever, big deal. More than half the league does it every year. But to actually win a playoff series, and I think that's interesting because if you look at the standings right now, especially like in the East, like you feel kind of good about that top four. When you're looking at like Milwaukee, Chicago, Brooklyn, Miami, like it's hard to imagine one of those teams losing in the first round based on how they're playing right now.
Yeah.
Then you go to the West and you feel pretty good about like Utah, Golden State, Phoenix. Maybe you throw Memphis in there, maybe you don't. But still, it feels like there's at least seven teams where you would be kind of surprised that they didn't make it out of the first round. And yet, going back 20 years, there has been 21 teams in the last 20 years who have met these criteria. They've been at the eighth seed or worse, 30 games in, they've had a huge second half, and they've not only made the playoffs, they've won a playoff series. And so today, me and Andrew are going to go through the candidates for this year's turnaround team and make our picks. Very exciting.
Oh, and hopefully, this is such a good idea. I think this is such a fun idea. And the fact that this has happened that many times where they've won a playoff series, because there's a lot of fan bases sitting back thinking,
it's
oh,
over.
Man. Like, we're the ninth seed. We're the 12th seed. Like, this, like, we're cooked. This is done. But there's hope. There's hope for somebody.
Right. And even if you, like, feel like your team can make the playoffs, you might feel like, well, there's no chance we're going to win a series at this point. But just hold out hope, because I'm going to, first of all, before we go into this year's contenders, I want to look back at a few of the teams who have been a turnaround team in the past. Now, the classic one was actually last year.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Hawks.
Yep.
31 games into the season, they were 13-18 post All-Star break, 25-11. And they, of course, went on to make the Eastern Conference Finals. And even almost as impressive one, last year's Denver Nuggets. They started only 17-15. At this point in the season, they were the eighth seed. They would finish as the, where is that? They would finish as the third seed after going 26-10 post All-Star break.
Unbelievable.
So those are some classic examples, but let's go back even further. So all the way back to 2002-2003, the Lakers.
Yep.
Remember that team? So this was post-threepeat. So they had just threepeated. Shaq had his foot surgery. He showed up late into the season. They actually started 11-19. And a lot of that was with Shaq. But they would finish 26-9. They would beat the Minnesota Timberwolves in the first round, but they would go on to lose. Another great one that I like is the 2011-2012 Boston Celtics. This was the last season of the Boston Big Three,
yep.
The Big Three era. That's when they made it all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, lost in seven to LeBron in Miami. That was a fun one. And then what about the 13-14 Brooklyn Nets? This was the team, of course, I just mentioned the Boston Big Three. This was the team the year after that who, of course, acquired Pierce, KG. They had Joe Johnson. They had D-Will. They had AK-47 and Jason Kidd as the head coach. They started out 10-20, which I did not remember.
Oh.
They would finish the season 20-11, beat Toronto in that first round series. Of course, it still ended up being a disappointing season for them, but they were still a turnaround team. And then there was the season of 2017-2018, where we actually had three turnaround teams. We had the Pelicans, who started off below 500, would finish the season 17-8. That was the team that swept Portland 4-0 in the first round. We had the Utah Jazz, who, as Thunder fans, we remember this. This was Donovan Mitchell's rookie season. Remember the summer before Gordon Hayward leaves? He's gone. The Utah Jazz are in disarray. They start off 14-16. They finish as the five seed and actually beat OKC in the first round with a rookie leading them. And then the Philadelphia 76ers started off 14-16. This was Ben Simmons' rookie year. And remember this one at the end of the season, Embiid gets hurt and he's out for like the last 15 or so games and they sweep him. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, Ben Simmons, this is amazing. Now, of course, it was against like very weak competition, but that arguably was like the highlight of Ben Simmons' career because I always remember that stretch.
Easily. There's too many lowlights to name at this point, but yeah, that was unbelievable. There's still that guy in there somewhere.
Somewhere. And actually, when we talk about some of the candidates, I'm going to bring him up because there's a lot of candidates where if they added Ben Simmons to their team, you would believe in them a lot more. And then the last one I just wanted to bring up was the 2018-19 Houston Rockets, who started off 16-15. This was the Carmelo year. Remember that year?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was brutal. Everyone was blaming Carmelo for all the Rockets' woes.
Yep.
They basically sent him out of the league.
They
you know,
did.
He was out of basketball. They would go on to be incredible. Like, they finished as the second offense in the league, fourth seed. They beat Utah, and then they would lose in the second round, I believe, to Golden State that year. So these are the types of teams that we're talking about. And as you just heard, like, a lot of these teams are pretty memorable teams. Like, you remember these teams. You remember the seasons they had. The last thing I want to bring up before we get into the candidates was there a major trade? Because I'm sure that's what people are thinking. Like, what caused these teams to have a huge turnaround? Was it just getting guys back healthy, or did they actually make a significant trade? And I went through every single one, looked at their transactions on Basketball Reference. And to be honest, the biggest trade out of all 21 teams was probably last year, Denver acquiring Aaron Gordon.
Aaron Gordon, yeah.
I think that was like the best name. You look at all the rest of these names, and there's good players here, but they're all like role players. You know, like Shane Battier, Marcus Thornton for Brooklyn.
Marcus like Thornton.
Yeah, I don't know why I included him, actually. I just really like Marcus Thornton in fantasy. But like the one of the Cavs teams back in 07, 08, that's when they added Wally Szczerbiak, Delonte West.
Yeah.
The Utah Jazz added Jay Crowder in 17, 18. You know, sure. Portland, the year they made the Western Conference Finals, added Rodney Hood. The point is, it wasn't like there was some like huge earth-shattering trade for any of these teams.
Yeah.
It was more just like movements around the edge of their roster, getting a rotation guy maybe, but nothing too crazy. In fact, half of these teams didn't even make a significant trade in the year that they were the turnaround team. So something to think about as we start going through the candidates. Okay. So are you ready, Andrew?
Let's do this.
Okay. So we're starting at tier four. And first, I will tell you that there are 20 candidates that technically fulfill the criteria so far. Okay, so there's a lot of teams, but some of them we probably don't have to spend a lot of time on. Tier four, these are teams I am not willing to spend even 2 seconds thinking about. That is Oklahoma City, Houston, Orlando, and Detroit. Are you okay with that?
Get out of here. All of you.
Okay, great.
Get out of here.
Don't even need to talk about them.
No.
Tier three, this is a special tier. This is teams I am willing to spend exactly 2 seconds thinking about, and no more. There's only one team in this tier, and it is the Sacramento Kings. And
yeah. No.
I'm only including them here just because they are one of those Ben Simmons teams where
sure.
you could imagine a scenario where if they traded for Ben Simmons and somehow they kept Haliburton, you could imagine a team, a good team, suddenly blossoming in Sacramento. Like, because the big problem with them is their defense. What if they brought in Ben Simmons? They all of a sudden became a good defensive team.
Al, can you imagine what it would be like to be a Sixers fan? You trade Ben Simmons, you get back like some decent pieces, and then Ben Simmons is the guy to turn the Kings around after 16 years? Like, if that's the guy that did that, I would be furious. I would be livid. I couldn't handle it.
I would agree with that. Of course, that's not what this is about. I'm not thinking about Sixers fans right now. I'm trying to help out Kings fans. I'm giving them their own tier, and I actually spent way more than 2 seconds thinking about them. So we'll move on, though, because I don't think either of us really can imagine that scenario.
No.
Okay, so tier two. This is when it starts getting a little juicy. These are teams that I think have enough talent to make the playoffs, but it's very hard for me to imagine them winning a playoff series. And that's the key distinction with these turnaround teams. Not only do you have to make it, you have to win a series. So for this, I had San Antonio, Indiana, Minnesota, the Knicks, the Raptors, and the Pelicans. In each of those cases, even a team like the Pelicans, like because of the Zion thing, what if he did come back? You could imagine them going on a hot streak post-All-Star break, making it into the play-in game, making it to the playoffs. It's just hard for me to imagine them ever winning a series right now. Same thing with Minnesota, who I think are having a nice season. I could completely see them making the playoffs.
For sure. Yeah.
But I
like the Spurs. I actually like what the Spurs are doing.
So the Spurs, out of these teams in this tier, I almost included them in the next tier up because...
I don't disagree. I really do like what they've done.
If you look under the hood on the Spurs, like they're kind of impressive. Out of all the teams we're going to talk about today, there is only one team that has a top half offense and defense, and it is the San Antonio Spurs. They are 10th in offense, 14th in defense. If you just go by net rating, they would be the fifth seed in the Western Conference. They would be a top 10 overall team in the league. They do have a really hard strength of schedule. They have the seventh hardest strength of schedule going forward. They are also a Ben Simmons team.
Yeah. Like, that's a destination where I think that you can make sense of it all, because having structure from the top down is something they've done since their inception. And their coaching is great. Their culture is great. Their development stuff is great. That's a place where I do think Ben could go in and really accentuate everything they're doing. And it makes sense. It would make absolute sense.
If you were going to choose a dark horse, it sounds like we both agree, like the Spurs would be a nice dark horse pick.
Yeah, they're a team that I would pick to make the playoffs, but like you said, I don't see them beating anybody in the top half of the West. Like, I just don't see that happening. You don't have, they don't have the juice to do that. You'd have to have, to me, that's, you have to have a superstar type of player like on your team that can just catch fire and to be able to do that. And they don't have that kind of juice.
Okay. So that was tier two, teams that we both think have enough talent to make the playoffs, but it's just very hard to imagine them winning a playoff series. And that brings us to tier one, which I've actually separated into two sub tiers, getting very complex. Tier 1A and Tier 1B. Let's start with Tier 1B. These are teams that can do it, that could be the turnaround team, but they might need to make a trade.
Yeah.
And that is Philadelphia, the Lakers, Portland, Boston, and Washington. And to be honest with Washington, I almost thought about bumping them down to Tier 2.
I wouldn't mind it. I actually, that's probably where I see them more so. I'd be floored if they won a playoff series.
Exactly. That's the problem.
Floored. Yeah.
They did have that really hot start, and it makes you think like, well, if they could get back to that.
Yeah.
But still, it feels like they need a trade. So I'd be open to bumping them down, which leaves you with Philadelphia, who we all know what trade they would need to make. Mm-hmm. The Lakers, who, this one's tough because like, they need to make a trade, but I'm not sure if that trade is actually there.
I know. Their roster construction is so flawed at this point. Not only with like your role players being too old, but just the fit problems that they have. LeBron and AD might be enough to just get over that stuff, and it's hard because I don't think Russ has been horrible this year, but I also think that Russ is a horrible fit for the roster. So it's just they're just in a tough spot, and I just don't know that you can trade Russ again this soon. I think maybe in the off season it might be a possibility, but who's taking on not only the money, but the personality, the possessions, like everything that it takes to bring Russell into your organization? I just think that's a really hard in season trade to make.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and the other problem with them is they're. Current lack of trade assets. Like every trade you see with the Lakers right now is Talen Horton Tucker, Kendrick Nunn, and a 2027 first, which like fine, maybe that gets them something. But going back to the Alex Caruso thing this summer, like not only would it be nice to just have Alex Caruso the player, but it'd also be nice to have Alex Caruso the contract because they don't really have a mid-sized contract outside of Talen Horton Tucker and I guess Kendrick Nunn. So I think they can do it simply because if you look at some of the lineup data with their big three, like it's mm-hmm. it's good.
Yeah.
But Davis is out for so long. They have the second hardest strength of schedule going forward. And it feels like if they are going to make it into the playoffs, it's going to probably be as a seventh or eighth seed, which means they're going to be playing Golden State or Phoenix. And do you really feel that confident about that? Maybe you do. Maybe for you, it's still a coin flip because you think, well, if they were healthy last year, they would have beaten Phoenix. I don't know. That's a tough one for me. Portland, we all know what's going on with Portland. You could imagine a scenario where if they just nailed whatever trade they're going to make, they could suddenly become good and win a first-round series. And then Boston is a really interesting one because of all these teams, they are the best defense. They have the ninth-ranked defense in the league right now. You see it in some of the lineup data with their big like four. Like if you look at the two Jays, Robert Williams, Marcus Smart, their lineup data is good.
Very good.
And so if they could make a deal, because they have all their picks going forward, they do have some guys in those mid-range type of contracts. It's not hard to envision them making some type of deal, getting a point guard, which would be amazing, and all of a sudden looking really good in the second half if they get some injury luck and health luck.
Yeah.
I mean, not out of their own possibility.
Even look at the lineup of Smart, Brown, Tatum, Horford, Robert Williams, plus 18 in like not insignificant number of possessions for the Celtics. So there's a good team in there. Part of it is that they just can't get everybody healthy at the same time. And they do just need to upgrade that one spot. There's just guys in there, like the Romeo Langford spot, like whoever's playing that role, whoever it is, Josh Richardson, Romeo Langford, Aaron Nesmith, whoever it is, they just need to upgrade that specific spot. And I do think that that would open up a lot of things for them. And they just need a player that's not going to just get their own. Because outside of Horford, it's really just everybody gets their own.
Right.
And if they can just have one connecting player to add in there with Horford, because Horford's been pretty good for them this year. And if Horford plus a connecting guard or wing, I don't think it has to be a guard. I think they could get a wing that connects them too. I mean, it'd be great. And, you know, sadly, like the player that I think would help them so much is a player that was on their team, Gordon Hayward. You know, if they had Hayward on this team, like that would be an amazing connecting piece for everybody. And I don't think they have the same problems, but not getting Hayward, that's not happening.
And that's why I separated these teams from the next three teams we're going to talk about, because something kind of significant needs to happen for all of these teams in that tier 1B for you to really believe in it. So if you're going to pick them, you're kind of going out on a limb, like I'm making a jump because I'm expecting some trade in the future. Whereas with the teams in tier 1A, I think you could argue that they might not need a trade and could still accomplish this. Sure. They could still make it to the playoffs and potentially win a series. And those teams are the Dallas Mavericks, the Atlanta Hawks, and the Charlotte Hornets. And the Hornets are kind of the most interesting to me. Yeah. One, because they're elite at something. They're the second ranked offense in the league right now. Super easy schedule rest of the season. 22nd hardest in the league. So I guess that's like 8th or 9th easiest. Mm-hmm. They've had significant, health issues with COVID. They had a lot of guys out of the lineup. When their guys have all been together, they've looked really good. They feel like a team that has way more depth than I thought coming into the season. So they're one that I'm willing to consider, like, strongly. Atlanta is like the obvious one because they literally just did it last year.
They've done it. Yeah.
They were the turnaround team. They far exceeded our expectations. It's largely the exact same roster. Mm-hmm. And so if they can just get healthy and start playing a little better defense, you might even argue they're the easiest pick. Sure. Like they would be the favorite for this. And then Dallas, you know, on the one hand, they have not won a playoff series in over a decade.
Right.
So that's kind of asking a lot.
Yeah.
But they do have a roster that's been there a lot of years now. They have Luka. They've actually played decently with Luka out of the lineup, so they haven't lost a ton of ground as of yet. And I think they're the type of team who in the West could get to that fifth spot, because that's what I'm really looking at. Because it's a lot to ask any of these teams to come in and beat Utah, Phoenix, or Golden State. But if you can get to the fifth seed and maybe you're playing Memphis or maybe one of these other teams jumps up there, it seems like a little easier of an ask. In fact, I would say that whatever Western Conference team can get to that fifth seed, I would probably pick them if I just like knew who it was. Because again, if you go back to the East, like I think I would only want to pick Philly to like actually beat Miami or Brooklyn or Milwaukee. Yeah. Like that's a lot to ask.
Yeah. I might be crazy for saying this and thinking this, but my turnaround team is Boston.
You know, they were actually my initial pick when I went through it, but I was like, is this stupid?
The reason is some of the lineup data that we cited earlier and the fact that they have the sixth best point differential in the East. Like there's evidence there that the team that we're watching is not as bad as shown. And I think they need to make a trade. We don't really know, and this is where you do feel like maybe this is stupid, is we don't know what Brad Stevens is as a general manager at the trade deadline. You know, is he somebody that's going to make a deal? There are some general managers that don't like to make trades in season. Now, this Boston team clearly needs some kind of mix-up, whether it be trading a couple of the young guys for some kind of connecting role-playing type of guy. I mean, we've talked about it on our Thunder show, like a Kenrich Williams to fill the spot of the Aaron Nesmith and whoever else he'd be a very helpful player. And that's not out of the realm of possibility that they can make a trade like that. So I don't think they're that far. And the fact that they already have a top 10 defense and they just need to get it together offensively when they have two like big time offensive weapons and guys who have been in the playoffs before and have experience. I don't know. There's just something in me that still believes that the Celtics team can turn it around a little bit. And also they have a rookie head coach who is kind of learning the ropes. You know, I think that there's some times where those guys start to figure things out too as the season goes on. So I'm going to stick with the Boston Celtics as my turnaround team. I could see them getting matched up with the Heat and possibly winning a series like that. If it's another team, if it's the Bucks, you know, I don't see them beating the Bucks. But, you know, I do still believe in the Tatum and Brown pairing. I know a lot of people are out on that, but I believe in the pairing. I believe in their talent alone. And I could see Tatum getting hot for a series and winning one. So
yeah,
that's who I'm sticking with.
I mean, I definitely think it's the most interesting option of all of these because it really was where I first went. And I'm not even saying I'm not going to pick that, but there's something about just how much better the East is that makes me feel like if a team's going to do this, because one of the things I didn't bring up, this does not happen every year. Like going back 20 years, there was actually six seasons where it did not happen, but there are seasons where you have multiple turnaround teams. And I wanted to do this because this season feels like one of those seasons, just because everything going on with COVID, like we haven't really seen a lot of these teams at full strength for like a solid month. You could definitely say that about Boston. You could say that about Dallas. I think I'm going to go with Dallas for that reason, which is that they have the superstar. They have an aggressive front office who I think has seen enough. I mean, hopefully, if they haven't seen enough of this roster at this point.
Like, enough of this current roster.
Yeah, like what else is there to see?
They have to make decisions too. Like Jalen Brunson's really, really good. Is he the best fit next to Luka is something they have to figure out.
Right.
And they have to figure it out relatively soon because he's going to get paid. And same with Dorian Finney-Smith. Like those guys are going to get paid and probably a lot. And then once you do that, you're not completely locked in because I think a lot of those contracts will be tradable. But you're effectively saying, like, here's our squad. Like, here it is. And if I'm them, like, this is not, like, the finished product that I want next to Luka. And so, yeah, I agree that they're a good candidate to improve with just adding Luka. But they also have flexibility where I think they could make a deal to get even better than they are now.
So maybe that's how we'll end it. We'll each pick an Eastern Conference team, Western Conference team. So our Eastern Conference turnaround team, it's going to be the Boston Celtics, who, by the way, I didn't even bring this up, second easiest remaining schedule.
Hey.
Just a little nice bonus for you. And then in the Western Conference, I'm going with the Mavs.
Yeah, I flirted with the Blazers, but man, they've been so bad. Like you have to believe in Dame. Like you just have to have this belief in Dame that goes back years and years and years. And that has to be what carries the day for you. Because even last night, and I know they're playing a lot of guys that really aren't on their team, but they were just so uninspiring to watch last night that it's just really, really tough. And it's like, and it's the defense stuff. That's why Boston, I mean, I'm talking about a team in Boston that went 4 of 42 from three last night and saying that that's the turnaround team.
Right.
But but defense is something that I'm like, okay, that shows up every night. Like you can choose to show up every night on the defensive end. And Portland has just flat out been horrific on the defensive end this year. And I just can't, there's just not much in me that can trust that.
And the problem with them for me is they've already dug themselves such a hole that even if they made it to the playoffs, they'd likely be playing one of those top three teams. Like currently, just to get to that fifth spot, which is where I think any of these teams need to get to, they're already 4.5 games back, whereas Dallas is only a game and a half back of that position. Yeah. So they just have a much longer road ahead of them. If they just make the playoffs, I think that'd be a success for the Blazers this year, given just how this season has gone.
Without a doubt. I mean, they're a full game back of the Kings right now. Like you as a fan of whatever team you are, you never want to say that phrase if you're trying to make the playoffs.
Shout out to the Kings, though. Have their own tier.
Hey, shout out to Mizzy Metu on your game winner. Way to go. All right. We'll be right back after this quick break, and we're going to talk about one of these top-tier teams. They don't need to turn it around. They're already good. It's the Utah Jazz.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, Andrew, it is time once again for the Wheel of Fandom, the segment where each week we spin a digital wheel, it lands on a team, and we become fans of that team. And this week, for the past 2 weeks, we have been following the Utah Jazz. As of Thursday, the Jazz are 25-9, third in the Western Conference, only two games back of the number one seed. 538 currently has the Jazz with a 22% chance of winning the finals this year, second best odds in the league. They've currently won five in a row, and after a matchup with the Wolves on Friday night, they have a marquee matchup with the Warriors on New Year's Day, the first time to meet this season. Andrew, if our Wheel Fandom team is the Utah Jazz, who is our guest?
We've got Tony Jones of The Athletic. Tony, what's up, man?
What's up? How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining. So Marcus Morris Sr. of the Clippers was recently asked about the Jazz, and he said, yeah, they're still the same team. Ain't nothing changed. Rudy protects all of them. None of them can really defend. Having watched this team the past couple seasons, is this assessment wrong? And in what ways have the Jazz improved compared to previous seasons?
Well, I would say he's right and wrong. I would say that he's right in terms that the Jazz are still not a great defensive team on the perimeter. I think that that's fair. I think that's accurate, especially when it comes to playoffs. I think that right now, as constructed, the Jazz are not matchup proof, which is what they need to be if they want to maximize their chances of winning it all. I do think the Jazz are a better team than last year, and possibly significantly so. Because Rudy Gay and Hassan Whiteside just give them an added dimension on both ends of the floor that they simply didn't have last year. So, I think, you know, if Morris Sr. was strictly talking about, hey, you know, these guys still aren't great defensively on the perimeter, that's fair to say. And I think it's fair to say that the Jazz probably have about 5 weeks leading up to the trade deadline to address that.
I wanted to ask you about Rudy Gay because he was kind of their biggest free agent acquisition this summer. And there was an expectation that they would try to run some small ball lineups with him at center. I was going through the lineup data. It looks like he's only played about 27 of his 386 minutes in lineups where he is the center. Do you think that's something we should expect to see more of as the season continues? Or is kind of finding a small ball lineup, should it be a priority for the Jazz?
You know, the thing is, in those 27 minutes, I mean, the Jazz have been really good in the small ball lineups. I can, you know, really, like, off the top of my head, like, point to two games where, you know, the small ball lineup actually turned a game in the Jazz's favor. And that was on a recent road trip where they played Cleveland. They built a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter. The next night in Minnesota, they did the same thing against the Timberwolves. You know, I know the numbers say that they haven't played a lot with it, but I think that's more of the fact that, you know, the Jazz know what they have with Rudy Gay at the five. The year before in San Antonio, he played over 200 minutes there. You know, and you know, you don't want to play Rudy Gay at the five, you know, I don't want to say exclusively because it's not exclusively, but you don't want to overplay Rudy Gay at the five. He's 35 years old. You don't want to expose him to all of that wear and tear. I think the Jazz know what they have with Rudy Gay at the five. I think, you know, they've had two stints where they've gone to it. They've gone to it and it was successful. You know, so I think going forward, I think it's going to be, you know, matchup based, or, you know, if they're missing, you know, Rudy Gobert, or if they're missing Hassan Whiteside. But, you know, I've seen the lineup a couple of times and the lineup looks good.
So Donovan Mitchell's season may not look all that different from last year when you're just looking at the stats, but if you watch him night to night, like a lot of people have noted that he's playing some of the best basketball of his career. Can you explain some of the improvements that Mitchell has made this season?
You know, I think the impact is a little bit different and it's a little bit better. One thing that I can say is that Mitchell is carrying his lineups a lot better. So he and Rudy Gobert, they stagger a lot. And, you know, the lineups with Rudy Gobert, when they stagger, you know, they have those lineups often have Mike Conley in them. And those are often, you know, some of the Jazz's best lineups in terms of plus minus. And, you know, typically, you know, in years past, it would be the Donovan Mitchell lineups that struggle. And those lineups have not struggled this year. Mitchell's lineups have been really good, as Gobert's and Conley's lineups. You know, I think that he's figuring out ways to, be more efficient. I think he's figuring out ways to get people involved in terms of the playmaking aspect. He's been better defensively than he has been in the past. You know, he was to a point where he was pretty lackadaisical defensively up until this year. And I think that he's been really competitive defensively. He's made a real effort defensively to make an impact on that end. You know, so I think that the overall impact is much better. I would say last year, I thought that he was playing at a borderline All-NBA level. I think this year he's playing at a no doubt lock All-NBA level.
You mentioned earlier about potentially upgrading this roster, and we've already heard reports that Utah is interested in trading for a defensive-minded wing. So how would you rank these three scenarios in terms of most likely to least likely? First, the Jazz just stand pat at the deadline, no major moves. Two, the Jazz make a smaller move for a bench wing like a Torrey Craig or someone like that. Or three, the Jazz make a more aggressive move involving a first and or a rotation piece like Ingles or Clarkson to make a significant upgrade.
I don't want to make it seem like I'm dodging the question. I would say the most likely scenario is that the Jazz are on the phone aggressively for 5 weeks. I think that that's, you know, like if I had to report something, I would report that. Like the Jazz are, you know, absolutely on the phone, talking to teams, scaling the league, seeing, you know, what's, you know, seeing, looking at the roster and seeing, you know, and analyzing the trade market. Secondly, I don't think they're going to stand pat. I think in some way, shape or form, I think the roster is going to look different on February 11th, which is the day after the trade deadline, than it does now. So I'm not sure in which way it looks different, but I do think it'll look different. So I think the two most likely scenarios are the Jazz make a move around the margins, in which means trying to upgrade the roster with a piece that doesn't require a piece from their rotation, or they make a more aggressive move, which involves either a first round pick down the road, which would be either 2026 or 2027, or which is the earliest they could trade one of their picks, or a current rotation player. The issue with the Jazz right now is that they are the best offensive team in the league, and what makes them the contender that they are right now is how dynamic they are offensively, how deep they are offensively. And if you take away one of those pieces, the Jazz are a team that's like a sum made up of its parts. And so if you take away one of those pieces, you're taking away from the entire sum of the parts. So if you take away, for sake of argument, if you take away Bojan Bogdanovic, you're taking away a lot of the spacing that makes them really good. If you take away Jordan Clarkson, you're taking away a really, really dynamic player off the bench, which you probably can't duplicate. If you take away Joe Ingles, then you're taking away so much of the playmaking that makes them good, the secondary playmaking that makes them good, other than Donovan Mitchell, Clarkson and Mike Conley. So it's a really delicate balance in terms of trying to add to the roster and not trying to take away what makes them good in the first place.
Have there been any like trade target names that Jazz fans are particularly interested in? Like, is there any Kenrich Williams buzz,
you know,
among
fans? I think Jazz fans know what the one weakness of this team is right now. And I think, so they're just like, we just need somebody to come in that can defend on the perimeter, period. I don't care who it is, you know, just somebody who can guard, you know, because I think you look at the Jazz, they're 25-9, they're two games, like you said, they're two games out of the first spot in the Western Conference. But you know, this team has one weakness, and that weakness is probably still there.
So looking ahead to the playoffs, who do you think presents the most difficult round two matchup for the Jazz between the Suns and the Warriors?
Probably the Warriors, just because stylistically, they represent everything that's given the Jazz issues in the past,
yeah.
Which is, you know, so on defensively, they switch absolutely everything, and they're dogs defensively. So, you know, I could see them defensively given the Jazz issues with their aggressive switching and, you know, really bogging Utah's offense down and basically putting the ball in the hands of Mitchell and Conley and just making them make all of the players off of isolation. And that's not something that the Jazz want to do. They want to move the ball. They want to create advantages, get downhill, get everybody touches, you know, and create shots that way. So I think defensively, that's what Golden State does. And offensively, obviously, you know, the smaller lineups, you know, with Draymond Green at the five, trying to force Rudy Gobert out of the paint onto the perimeter and, you know, making Quinn Snyder do unique things in order to try to keep Gobert close to the paint. So, you know, for example, like if Golden State were to play Draymond Green exclusively at the five against Utah at center against Utah, it would be hard for Quinn Snyder to have Rudy Gobert on Draymond Green, not because Rudy Gobert can't guard Draymond Green, but because, you know, the way that Draymond Green plays with Stephen Curry in terms of the dribble handoffs and then Curry coming downhill and either pulling for three or trying to get to the basket, that would cause an issue in a way that Gobert has to defend, and he just wouldn't be able to stay close enough to the basket for the Jazz's liking. So, you know, just the small ball aspect that Golden State brings in the way they defend, I think they will cause the most schematic issues for the Jazz in the playoffs.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for answering our questions, but it's now time to play Andrew versus The Beat, our weekly trivia show where Andrew goes head-to-head against the NBA beat writer. Of course, this week it's Tony Jones, beat writer for the Utah Jazz. Tony, I believe you played Andrew before in Andrew vs. The Beat. I don't remember who won, but I'm going to assume
lost.
You did.
Did I lose?
I'm going to assume Andrew lost, because I think that was back at the beginning, and I would rather Andrew.
Yeah, I definitely lost. Yeah, I remember.
So that means Tony can go up 2-0 on Andrew today. So how this works, Tony, there's 8 questions, all about the Jazz. You're just going to give me a number between 1 and 8. If you get it right, you get 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew gets a chance to steal for 1 point. We'll go back and forth until all the questions have been asked and answered. So, can you give me a number between 1 and 8?
4.
Question number 4. Quinn Snyder currently has 348 career wins as a head coach. There are 11 NBA head coaches with more career wins than Snyder, and we're going to try to name them all. So how this works, Tony, you'll give me a name, then Andrew will give me a name. We'll go back and forth until one of you stumbles. So there are 11 coaches with more career wins than Quinn Snyder.
All right, I'm going to start with the easy one. Greg Popovich.
Greg Popovich, that's correct. Andrew.
Goodness.
It's a third of the league, Andrew. You can just throw out a coach's
name. I understand that, Al. Can I have a minute? Eric Spoelstra.
Eric Spoelstra, that is correct. Back to Tony.
I'll go with another easy one. Rick Carlisle.
Rick Carlisle is correct. Back to Andrew.
Coach Bud?
Coach Bud, that is correct. Back to Tony.
Tom Thibodeau.
Yes, Tibbs is correct. More career wins than Snyder. Andrew, back to you. It's going to start getting dicey pretty soon.
It's feeling that way currently.
There's still some names that you're going to feel dumb if you don't get them.
Vogel?
Yeah, Frank Vogel. That is correct. Back to Andrew, Tony.
Andrew, you took my next one. That one hurt. That one really hurt. You know what? This one is dicey, but I'm going to throw it out there just because he's been out around for a long time. Alvin Gentry.
Alvin Gentry is correct. I thought no one would get that one, but yes, Alvin Gentry has won more games than Quinn Snyder. Andrew.
Oh, man.
If it makes you feel better, I think Alvin Gentry is the hardest name to get.
Oh, that doesn't make me feel better.
Yeah, the problem is that the pool is smaller right now.
Yeah, Doc Rivers.
Yes, Doc Rivers. That is correct. Back to Tony. So we have three names left. You guys have the potential to get all 11. Three names to go.
Oh, Steve Kerr.
Yes, Steve Kerr. That was the other one I felt like you guys would definitely get. Two names left, Andrew. Can you get one of them? Coach who has won.
What about Dwayne Casey?
Dwayne Casey is correct. That means there is one name left. If Tony gets it, he gets the first 2 points of the game. If he doesn't, Andrew will steal for one. There's one more coach. There's one more games than Quinn Snyder.
I'm just going to throw out Nick Nurse. I know what's wrong.
You got the first letter correct. It is Nate McMillan.
Nate McMillan. Good gosh.
Oh, man. That was not going to be my guess. I would have gotten it wrong.
What was going to be your guess?
Well, I just, This didn't feel right. I was going to say Billy, but Billy hadn't been around long enough.
Oh, yeah. Billy's like in the 200s. Okay, Andrew, what do you want next?
Number one.
Question number one. The Utah Jazz's starting lineup is the most played five-man lineup in the league with 412 minutes played. What is the second most played lineup in the NBA this season? You have to give me the players. Five-man lineup.
I have to name all the players in the lineup.
Yeah, you do.
I think it's the Timberwolves.
Ooh.
Okay.
Towns, Edwards, Russell, Pat Bev, Vanderbilt.
Wrong, Andrew. Tony gave a chance to steal. What is the second most played five-man lineup in the NBA this season?
So it's got to be a team that hasn't been ravaged by COVID. I'm going to guess the Knicks.
Very good guess.
Yeah.
It's already wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong.
They're the number four. It is the Phoenix Suns. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Bridges, Crowder, Ayton. And then the Warriors are number three. All right, back to Tony. Tony, you're only down one.
Three.
Question number three. Rudy Gobert is currently averaging over 15 rebounds per game, at least when I check this. In the last 20 years, going back to 1996, only four other players have accomplished that feat. I'm going to give you 1 point per correct answer. So if you can name all four, you could potentially get 4 points here. So this is going back to 1996, somebody who has averaged at least 15 rebounds per game for a season.
Dennis Rodman.
That is incorrect.
Good gosh. When is the last time he did that?
So that actually would have been correct if I had gone back to like 25 years, because he did it in like 94.
I thought there was a chance he would have done it for the 96 team.
It was a very good guess, because it is technically, I mean, it's true. He just didn't do it since 1996. Andrew, you have a chance to steal here.
Did Dwight do it?
No. You both lost the names. Andre Drummond. Pretty easy one.
Andre Drummond.
Kevin Love. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, K-Love.
DeAndre Jordan. And then the last one, this is the oldest one, Ben Wallace. Okay.
That's the wrong Lakers center.
Wrong Lakers center. Okay, Andrew, it's back to you. You're still only up 1-0.
Number two.
Question number two. As of December 30th, only one Jazz player is shooting a career high in three-point percentage. Who is it? Andrew, I'm letting you know this isn't going to be like a weird answer, like how Jared Butler is a rookie, so it's obviously his career high. This is like of their main like eight or nine top players. Who is shooting a career high 3-point percentage?
Is this Mike Conley?
Oh,
it is Andrew for 2 points.
The one thing the one guy's answer that I definitively knew when he got it, Andrew. Mike Conley is shooting 43% from 3-point range. That is a career high.
And it would have been Bojan as well, but he dropped just below his career high last night. So it's technically almost two, guys. Okay, Tony, you're only down 2-1. Actually, no, 3-0.
Tied if Andrew hadn't gotten that one. let me get number five.
Number five. The Jazz currently have five players on their roster who were named to an all-rookie team during their rookie seasons. How many can you name? I'm going to give you 1 point per correct answer. If you got all five, you could get 5 points on this question. So they're currently on the Jazz roster.
Five players who were named to an all-rookie team.
Yes.
All right. Donovan Mitchell.
That is correct for a point.
Rudy Gay.
That is correct for 2 points. Thought that one might be tricky.
Mike Conley.
Mike Conley did not make an all-rookie team. He did not. I'm going to double check because of the way you reacted, but I don't believe.
No, you know what? He didn't break out until his second year. That's my fault. I tricked that.
Okay. So you did get 2 points. Andrew, you now have a chance to steal. You could potentially get 3 more points, Andrew.
Oh, boy.
It'd be very big for you.
Joe Ingles?
No! Andrew!
So it was actually Bojan actually made all rookie.
He did. That's one of them. There's two more.
Eric Pascal?
Yes.
Yep, Eric Pascal.
Dang it.
And the last one.
Oh, dude, it was Royce O'Neal.
Is that true? I have Jordan Clarkson.
Oh, making, Jordan Clarkson. All rookie team. Yeah.
Yes. Look. Okay, Tony, it's 3-2. Only down by one. It is going back to Andrew, though. Andrew, we have 6, 7, and 8 left.
Okay. 6.
Question number 6. How many players on the current Jazz roster are in the top 10 for three-pointers made in Utah Jazz franchise history? So you don't have to tell me their names. You just have to give me the number. How many players on the current Jazz roster are in the top 10 franchise history three-pointers made?
3.
That is correct, Andrew. It is Joe Ingles, Donovan Mitchell, and Bojan. All right, Tony, 2 questions left. Number 7 or number 8?
Number 7.
Number 7. Rudy Gay has played for 5 NBA teams. During which of those 5 stops did Rudy have his best scoring season, averaging 21.1 points per game?
Toronto.
That is incorrect. Andrew, you have a chance to steal.
Oh, this feels very tricky.
Or is it? Or is it a reverse trick question? Is it the obvious answer?
Because it does feel like he was really good his like first few years in Memphis. I'll say Sacramento.
Well, you figured out my trick question, Andrew. It was Sacramento.
Yes.
Okay.
I knew it was one of those post-Memphis years that he was really good.
Yeah.
And to be fair, he did have a year in Memphis where it was like very close. He scored like 20, but his best scoring season was in Sacramento, 2014-15. Okay, Andrew, you have a commanding 7-2 lead going into the final question. The Jazz are one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league. Currently have 4 players shooting over 40% from corners. From the corners. Ooh. Which Jazz player is currently shooting the best from the corners, making 46% of his corner threes?
Bogdanovich? I have no idea.
Wow, Andrew, you are on fire. One of your highest scoring games. Andrew, I didn't know you knew the Jazz so well.
It was definitely Bojan. I knew that.
Well, Andrew, you've evened it up against Tony. We'll look forward to the rubber match.
Yes.
In months to come.
Andrew, you have kicked Tony's ass.
Yes. I kicked him into the new year. Tony, thanks so much for coming on the show. Be sure to go read everything Tony writes on The Athletic. Go listen to his Jazz podcast with our guy Dave DeFore, Game Notes. It's a really fun podcast.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining.
Thanks, Tony. All right, thanks again to Tony Jones, but it is now time to choose another team to follow. Now, this team is going to be another 2-weeker, Andrew, because we don't have a pod next week.
That's right.
So we're going to be diving deep on whatever this team is. We still have a ton of teams. I'm still adding ones on. So let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Who will it be? First team of the new year, first team of 2022 will be...
Who's our new year team?
The Milwaukee Bucks.
Ooh, that's a fun one.
Dante DiVincenzo is back.
Yes, we'll bring our guy Eric Name back on the pod. Another rematch here on Andrew versus the Beat with Eric. Looking forward to that. Before we go, if you want to give us a little New Year's gift, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and we'll read it on the show. This review comes from _JMM. He says that he loved Jay King on Slam and Jam. He said, love the Athletic NBA show and absolutely adore the Saturday Slam and Jam. Jay King on Andrew versus the Beat had me laughing so hard I was crying. Thanks for bringing the joy and starting my weekend off right. Thanks so much for that review and for listening to our show. Again, as Alex stated, we will be back in 2 weeks. So enjoy your New Year's, and we will talk to you guys again in 2 weeks.